What is going on, everybody? It is wedding night in Jacksonville. I am the Sala Monster here with you for February 3rd. Look at all those threes in the chat. Yes, it is February 3rd. The forbidden door has been opened. Is it a sign of more to come, or is it a one-off kind of you scratch my back, I'll scratch yours, since Jon Moxley just made an appearance on an episode of New Japan Strong? Was this AEW paying them back one time? Or could this be the beginning of something a little bit more? We got a Kenta cameo with the end of Dynamite tonight. And as my good friend Jacob Donnelly pointed out here, one of the many super chats that we have coming in, Jacob Donnelly, I think, summed it up best. We just saw a show featuring AEW, New Japan, Impact, and NWA talent. Now, whatever you may think, whatever you may say about AEW, you got to admit, that's pretty fucking cool. On TNT, live television, you got talent from AEW, Impact, New Japan, and NWA. Four different promotions, although NWA these days, I'm not sure if it's really a full-blown promotion or not. That's pretty cool. Remember, the AEW audience, I think, in a lot of ways, they're very, I think, in tune with a lot of what's going on in other companies, not just AEW. I do think it's a very different audience than, you know, an audience that would watch Raw, for example. So, I'm going to guess that a lot of the people watching the show tonight knew exactly who Kenta was. Unless they just looked at him and said, hey, what's Hideo Itami doing on Dynamite? You'll have some of those people as well. But I would think that, you know, a lot of the people who generally watch the AEW product, they know who he is, and they're probably excited about the prospect of the two companies doing more together in the future. Now, like I said before, I have no idea if there is any kind of relationship here that's going to lead to more crossover between the two companies, but if you've been listening to my podcast and watching my streams going back to last year, I mean, you know my thoughts on the whole thing. It's kind of crazy, frankly, pandemic aside, that they could work something out a little bit sooner. Now there's a new change in management at New Japan that might make it a little bit easier for the two companies to work together. The pandemic is an issue. I mean, there's no doubt about it. The pandemic is, you know, with the travel restrictions and everything, and I saw Japan is going on the lockdown for another month. It makes things tough. But to me, it was always inevitable that these two companies at some point were going to work together. I think it can be a mutually beneficial relationship, more so probably for New Japan, because we still don't know what their new TV deal is going to be in this country any week now. We keep hearing they're going to announce TV any week now. I don't have any inside track on where that's going to be, but I'll tell you, when the announcement is finally made, my guess is that a lot of people are probably going to be disappointed. I'm going to take a guess that when the announcement finally comes about where New Japan has gotten their new TV here in the States, the general reaction here is probably going to be, eh, all right. So they don't have a big TV presence in this country. And if they can have some of their stars making cameos on the show, like a Thunder Rosa does for the NWA, Serena Deeb, whether it's Kenta, whether it's, you know, somebody bigger, whether it's somebody like Ibushi or Naito or one of their top stars, it's going to be hugely beneficial to New Japan, because they've been trying to make inroads here in this country now for the last few years. But I think for AEW, you know, they know their audience. They know what their audience likes and what their audience probably doesn't like. I think in their mind, they think that their audience would find that very appealing. So again, mutually beneficial. It's only a matter of time before these two companies are going to work together. I hope personally that what we saw tonight is the start of something special, because it is long overdue. But Kenta is challenging Moxley for the IWGP United States Championship in a few weeks. I think February 26th on New Japan Strong. My guess is he's going to drop the title there. So they're having a match in a few weeks. I don't know if there's going to be more Dynamite appearances between now and then for Kenta. I would think there probably would be. But a very unexpected, although it should not have been. Kenta posted something earlier on social media saying, I think today is going to be a good day. And most people thought he was just trolling. Well, as it turned out, he was not trolling. So I say it was unexpected. I guess if you follow him on Twitter, it shouldn't have been unexpected. We open tonight, though, with the Tag Team Battle Royal for a shot of the AEW Tag Team Championships at Revolution, unless the Young Bucks were to win, because the Young Bucks were in the Battle Royal. They are the champions. If they won tonight, then they would have the chance to choose who they defend the titles against on March 7th. That's the new date. Revolution has been pushed back to next month. FTR was suspended after cutting off Luchasaurus's horn. So he's got the fucking horns on his mask. And for whatever reason, this was such a heinous atrocity what they did last week. They were suspended. So they were out of the Battle Royal. Rules were both members of a team had to be eliminated for the entire team to be eliminated. So we've seen Battle Royals before where if one member is eliminated, the whole team is gone. Didn't work that way. Isaiah Cassidy, this was honestly my favorite part of the whole Battle Royal because it popped me. It actually got a laugh out of me. Very early on at the beginning of this Battle Royal, everyone's brawling. Isaiah Cassidy goes to the top rope and he does a dive. And everybody is like the parting of the Red Sea. Everybody just scatters and he crashes and burns. And they all look down. They kind of stare at him like, what an idiot. And they go back to fighting. I don't know why. It got a laugh out of me. I thought that was funny. John Silver. Now, this was, I guess, an upset. John Silver eliminated Jake Hager, who was not very happy about that. Luchasaurus ran wild. He was killing everybody. I guess when you get your horns cut off, you get all pissed off. Maybe it some kind of hormone balances his hormones or something. John Silver and Evil Uno eliminated Luchasaurus. Nick Jackson eliminated Ortiz. Then he eliminated Santana of the Inner Circle. The Good Brothers, who were in the main event later on, they showed up at ringside and they pulled down the top rope. Isaiah Cassidy of Private Party went flying out to the floor. Anderson and Gallows will defend their Impact Tag Team titles against Private Party, not this weekend, but next Saturday. Impact is having their No Surrender pay-per-view, and so that match is already booked. So Nick Jackson, Matt Jackson had already been eliminated, okay? So Nick is the only Buck left, right? One half of the Bucks was already dumped out. Nick Jackson had his back turned, and MJF dumped him out, so with the Bucks eliminated, that meant that whoever won this Battle Royal, they were going to be the number one contenders. Came down to Jericho, MJF, Sammy Guevara, Jungle Boy, Darius Martin of Top Flight, and Max Caster of the Acclaimed. MJF eliminated Jungle Boy. Caster held MJF for Sammy. Sammy was more than happy to try to deliver the super kick. MJF ducked. And he hit Caster instead. MJF charged at Caster. Caster backdropped him out to the floor. So MJF was gone. Martin eliminates Max Caster. And so it's down to Chris Jericho, Sammy Guevara, and Darius Martin. Big spot for Darius Martin. One half of Top Flight. One of the final three here in this Battle Royal. He was trying to dump Sammy out of the ring. Jericho dumped Martin out over the top rope. He landed on the apron. But when he dumped him out onto the apron, I guess the announcers were trying to explain this. Like, Jericho didn't see Sammy. He didn't realize that Sammy was on the other side, trying not to be eliminated. So when Jericho dumped Martin over, Sammy hit the floor. And Sammy looked up and saw that Jericho was the one who basically dumped him, and he wasn't very happy about that. So it came down to Jericho and Martin. Darius hit a missile drop kick, then charged at Jericho, who backdropped him out onto the apron. And Jericho knocked him off the apron with the Judas effect. And he took a nasty spill to the floor. It looked like he smacked the back of his head real good on the floor. So Chris Jericho and MJF are going to challenge for the AEW Tag Team titles against the Young Bucks at Revolution next month. Sammy stormed off to the back. So they furthered that story. There was another segment later in the show I'm going to talk about here in a second. But this whole rift within the Inner Circle, this strife, which, I mean, if you go back months, we talked about it here on the stream. I mean, you knew this is where it was going to lead. You knew that MJF was going to blow this fucking group up from within. And piece by piece, bit by bit, they're taking their time. They're telling that story each week. And MJF on TV acts like, no, you know, he's all in on being a part of the Inner Circle. But you know that deep down in the end, the big reveal is going to be, he knows what he's doing. He's not stupid. He's trying to take over and invade from within. Sammy Guevara hates his guts. He doesn't like him. He wants him out of the group. So they furthered that story. It was nice also, you know, to see there at the end, One half of Top Flight, one half of the Acclaimed, two of their young teams there and at the end. I do wish Santana and Ortiz were not treated like such afterthoughts. You know, they have so many tag teams. Their tag team division is just stacked. And Santana and Ortiz, I think, are victims of that. I know they're part of this whole ongoing Inner Circle storyline, but it still feels like they're on the back burner. They're just an afterthought. When you think about the tag team division, nobody talks about them. Nobody really thinks much about them. And I'm hoping as this storyline progresses to wherever it's going to go, coming out of this, whether there's a split in the Inner Circle, it's almost like NWO, NWO Wolfpack. We have the black and white, the red and white. We might end up with two versions of the Inner Circle. But however this ends up, my hope is that they will come out of this on the other end and start getting some of the spotlight back for themselves. Because they are a very good team. But they've just sort of been pushed into the background. A little bit too much, I think. So I mentioned that later on in the show, there was a segment that furthered the Inner Circle story. Alex Marvez, or as MJF called him, Alex Marquez, tried to get an interview with Jericho and MJF, who were celebrating their big Battle Royal victory. Jericho was, what else? Of course, he was carrying a cooler with bubbly into the dressing room and couldn't understand why Santana and Ortiz and Sammy, they didn't seem very jovial. They didn't seem very excited. And Sammy said, you know, when Jericho says that we're all in this together, he's not so sure. And he left the room. Jericho chased after him. So when Jericho and Sammy left, MJF looked at Santana and Ortiz and looked over at Wardlow and said, take care of the camera guy. He goes, we have to have a conversation, all of us. And he looked at Wardlow, he said, get the camera guy out of here. So the question now about this conversation, are they going down a path where Jericho is excommunicated from the group? Or Jericho and Sammy are excommunicated from the group? Because someone is going to get kicked out. And whoever it is, unless it's MJF, I don't know that it'll be him. But if it's Jericho, if it's Sammy, I would think whoever it is ends up going babyface. Now, Sammy Guevara as a babyface, I think is inevitable. I didn't know that I was expecting it to happen this soon, if it does happen, but Sammy will eventually be a big babyface in this company. Jericho eventually will be a babyface too. He's been a heel from day one. Whether it's next month, next year, 2 years from now, Jericho's not going anywhere. He'll be a babyface at some point. The only question is, who's it going to be? So I'm not sure which direction they're going to go with this. They have a few different pathways they can take. They could all get hip to what MJF is trying to do and just kick his ass and boot him out. Or there can be a split in the group, and maybe the end result is there is no more Inner Circle. Maybe the idea is that when this runs its course, the entire group is disbanded and everybody goes their separate ways. So Santana and Ortiz can go out on their own. Sammy, maybe he goes babyface. He goes out on his own. MJF is back with Wardlow. I don't know. I don't know what their idea is as far as where this ends. But I did like the furthering of that on this show. I thought that was good. So then we had Tony Schiavone. Tony Schiavone was in the ring for an interview with his favorite person in the world. He was in the ring for an interview with Sting, his favorite wrestler. Sting and Darby Allin, they were here. Sting has been, I believe, on every episode of Dynamite since he debuted. I disagree with that tremendously. I think every single week this guy shows up, it just makes him a little less special. That's just how I feel. I don't see the need to put him on every single show. But there he was. There he was again, back in the ring. Schiavone mentioned that Darby Allin is going to defend his TNT title next week. He's going to defend it against Joey Janela. Why Joey Janela is getting a title shot is beyond me, but it's a person for Darby to beat, I guess. That's the only role that Janela should be serving in this situation. So before the interview could even get going, Team Taz is in the parking lot. Taz has a mic. Taya says, we're not allowed into the building after what we did last week. We beat up the merch guys by the merch stand in the parking lot, so they're not allowed in the building. However, AEW was nice enough to supply them with a microphone so that they could interrupt this segment. They're not allowed in the building. They're not allowed to interfere in anything in the building physically, but they can interfere verbally. I thought that was very accommodating of the company. They said they'll be watching that TNT title match next week very closely. Ricky Starks took the mic. He says that when he looks at Sting, he doesn't see the icon anymore. Darby, next week, you better have eyes in the back of your head. It's basically what he was saying. Sting spoke. This was his 30 seconds of work that he had to put in this week. And he said that, look, he's going to be there too. Of course he is. He's there every fucking week. Why wouldn't he be there? Where else would he be? Of course Sting will be there. He's going to be there next week to make sure it stays one-on-one. He goes, secondly, Ricky Starks, you say that when you look in the Stinger's eyes, you no longer see the icon. And the camera zoomed in on Sting's face. And he said, maybe you need to look a little bit closer. Maybe you need to take a closer look. And that was it. That was Sting's big speech for this week. And they walked to the back. So there you go. We had Britt Baker against Thunder Rosa, NWA's Thunder Rosa. They had a very good match. I thought this was one of the better matches I've seen Britt Baker have, actually. A very good match with a finish that sets up the obvious rematch between these two. They go to break. So they wrestle for a little bit. They go to break. They come back. Rosa hits Britt with a Death Valley driver on the ramp. Drops her right on the back of her head. Back in the ring, Baker hits a sling blade, kick to the face for a near fall. Air raid crash by Britt only gets a two. Rebel hands Britt Baker the black glove, the black surgical glove, which usually comes before lockjaw. And she goes for the move. Rosa, though, gets her foot on the bottom rope, breaks up the lockjaw attempt. Britt hits a curb stomp, followed by a lockjaw attempt number two. And Rosa, at this point, they had a whole, like, rolling exchange. They were doing, like, a whole sequence of chain wrestling here. And ultimately, it ended with a back suplex. Down goes Britt. Rosa hits another Death Valley driver. Britt kicks out. So Rosa tries for an armbar. She's going to try to submit her with an armbar. Rebel climbs into the ring, rips off the middle turnbuckle. This is a distraction for Thunder Rosa, who goes over and knocks down Rebel. Mission accomplished. All she wanted to do was get her attention away from Britt. She let go of the hold, so it served its purpose. Finish came when Britt Baker sent Rosa face first into the exposed buckle, and Rosa sold it like she was knocked out cold. She was dead. And Britt put the lockjaw on, but she was already out. Referee immediately called for the bell. Britt Baker picks up the win. Like I said, one of the better Britt Baker matches that I have seen of her in AEW. And Rosa is awesome. Thunder Rosa is always awesome. She's fucking great. So they're having a women's world title eliminator, which I'm sure you guys know if you've watched Dynamite over the past couple of weeks. They've advertised the fact they're having, much like they did with the men back in October and November, they're having a world title eliminator tournament to crown a number one contender for Hikaru Shida's championship. We got a little more information on that tonight. 16 women total, which I think is the number of men they had in the men's version. So we're going to get 16 women. And yes, as Christian in the chat mentions, no Ivelisse. No Ivelisse in this eliminator. It's divided into eight talents. I think it's even, eight and eight. Eight talents from Japan, eight from the U.S. So we're getting some international talent here in this tournament. I don't know if that means that those matches are going to be taped overseas or if these women are traveling in for the tournament. I don't know. They didn't show a bracket or anything. We don't have all the information yet. We have names, though. On the Japanese side, here's a name I'm sure you know. Aja Kong. The legend. Aja Kong is going to be in this tournament. Yuka Sakazaki, who we've seen on AEW television before. Emi Sakura, we've seen her as well. And then there's a whole other series of Joshi wrestlers here. I hope I don't butcher their names, but I'm sure I will. Veni is her name. Ryo Mizunami, Mei Tsuruga, Rin Katakura, and Maki Ito. They represent the Japanese contingent in this tournament. Actually, that's not true, because one of the U.S.-based wrestlers is actually Riho, who I believe has relocated or is in the process of relocating to the U.S. So they consider Riho part of the U.S. contingent. But yes, Riho is in, Serena Deeb, Britt Baker, Thunder Rosa. So that's probably where the rematch happens right there. They didn't show a bracket, so I don't know if it would be in the opening round, the semifinals, but my guess is that's where this rematch is going to take place. Tay Conti, Nyla Rose, Anna Jay, and Layla Hirsch. So those are the women in the Eliminator. Not knowing what the bracketing is going to be, just looking at the names. Look, before they even announce this later in the show, when Britt Baker won this match, my first thought was it perfectly sets up Britt Baker to be the number one contender for the championship. Because when I did my predictions earlier in the year, I think it was on that show, my prediction was the woman who is going to take the title from Shida is going to be, or should be, Britt Baker. Because she has. She's improved in the ring, but more than that, just as a heel. She's so much more enjoyable as a heel than I ever found her to be as a babyface. I enjoy her act. And so I think now that we've had a babyface champion for so long, we're overdue for a heel to hold that title. I think Britt Baker takes the title from Shida, has it for a while, and you could always have Rosa be the one to take the championship from her. Now, Rosa is still signed with the NWA through, I think, most of this year. So I don't know what her contract status would be 6, 9, 12 months from now. But I think, again, without knowing the bracketing, it's hard. It's tough because Britt won tonight. That normally would tell me that Thunder Rosa is going to win the rematch. Well, if the rematch is in the tournament, then Baker is bounced. But I think Baker is going to be the one to take the title from Shida. So I don't know quite which way they're going to go with it. Before they announce this stuff later in the show, I was almost thinking that maybe the match at Revolution would be a three-way. You know, you could do a rematch between now and then between Baker and Rosa. Maybe there's some kind of fluke finish or non-finish, and it leads to a triple threat at Revolution. I don't know how you get there. If you're having a tournament, how you get to a three-way. So I don't think we're going to get a triple threat. But I do. I think Britt Baker should be the one to take that championship from Shida. That's how I feel. Let's grab a few super chats, just so we don't fall too far behind. Always love hearing from you guys. So let's take a look here. Man, we got a bunch of them. Ryan, what's going on, Ryan? Ryan Spies dropping some love here. He thought the most shocking moment in AEW history was the women getting a good time slot tonight. Ryan says Luther is one of his favorites in AEW. So you're the one. Good to know. We'll agree to disagree. And he thought the wedding was absolutely hilarious. Again, we will have to agree to disagree. I will get to the wedding here in a second. But first, Matt Hardy and Hangman Page against Chaos Project, Luther and Serpentico. So again, Matt Hardy, the story here is very simple. Danny says, Luther is absolutely horrendous. He really is. I mean, I'm sure Luther is a very nice guy, but he does not belong on Dynamite. Luther got put in a cake by an 8-year-old. Was it last week, the week before? That was fine. That's the perfect role for Luther. Otherwise, I really don't have a need to see Luther on Dynamite. You can put Luther on Dark all you want to. I don't watch Dark every week. I try to check out parts of it because I think Taz and Excalibur are a very entertaining. I would even go as far as to say that Taz and Excalibur on Dark, from what I've heard of them, may well be the best, honestly. And they may well be the best announced team out there. I do enjoy Kevin Kelly, though. Rocky in New Japan, Rocky Romero, when he joins them, Rocky Romero is very good. So it's probably between those. But that is where Luther and that is where Serpentico belong. But here, they took the L against Hangman and Matt Hardy. Page went for the Buckshot Lariat. Luther pulled him off the apron. Luther then is on the apron. And Luther was going to do a cannonball off the apron onto Hangman. Well, Hangman sidestepped him. Luther went splat on the floor. And Hangman just had a look on his face when the camera panned up like, oh, well, tough shit. Went into the ring, hit the Buckshot Lariat to Serpentico. Matt Hardy blind tagged himself in and stole the pin. So Matt Hardy is basically showing up every week trying to steal the glory. And that was the end of the segment. Hangman Page didn't quite know what to make of this. Obviously, he knew this guy just stole the pin away from him. Matt was trying to high-five him and be his friend. So we'll see where this story goes. And then it was time. You hear that? You hear that? You hear wedding bells? Wedding bells are chiming in the background. It was time for the big wedding. This was the first wedding in AEW history. I guess it wouldn't be a wrestling show without every promotion at one time or another having a wedding. I'm trying to think of the first wrestling wedding that I can remember. And it actually wasn't Macho Man and Miss Elizabeth. I was very young, but I think it was probably Uncle Elmer on Saturday night's main event. And again, I was very young at that time. But I do have vague memories of that, or highlights of it. But the first wrestling wedding that I really remember and enjoyed probably was Macho Man and Miss Elizabeth. And actually, the wedding that night at SummerSlam went fine. It went off without a hitch. Match made in heaven, match made in hell. Great promotion for SummerSlam that year. It was at the after party where everything just went straight to hell when Jake Roberts got involved. So it was time for the wedding of Kip Sabian and Penelope Ford. Yes, let me know in the chat. I know we have a lot of longtime wrestling fans tuned in here. What was the first wrestling wedding that you remember seeing? Because I know we have older fans, we have younger fans. The younger fans are probably going to say fucking Lana and Bobby Lashley, which is horrendous. But yeah, let me know. What was the first wrestling wedding that you guys remember? Or am I the only old fart here tonight? So they did position this at the top of the hour, which I thought was smart. So right around 9 p.m., because look, the reason they do this shit is because, well, they probably do it to try to attract some female viewers as well, but they do it because wrestling weddings, not always, but a lot of the time, have generally drawn well. Impact has done it. Every promotion has done it. Maybe ECW. Did ECW have a wedding? The original ECW? I don't think they did. It was ECW. So if they had a wedding, it was probably immediately followed by the divorce. But they do it because it generally does big numbers. So I am curious when the quarter hours come out. Usually I read the quarters in the Observer. But tomorrow we'll know. We'll know tomorrow how the show tonight did. Very curious to see. I also realized, and Miro made a note of this a little bit later, we never got the bachelor party. So you would think, okay, these guys are going to do a wedding. They've been hyping it now for months. Part of the fun is the bachelor party stuff. And we never got any of that. Now, I don't want to hear COVID, because if Chris Jericho and his inner circle buddies over there can go to Vegas. Remember they did those segments out in Vegas where they're out in the town and they're drinking and they were reenacting the hangover? Why couldn't we get some kind of bachelor party segment or series of segments for Kip Sabian? So we never did get that bachelor party. Now, Sabian did an interview earlier this week where he mentioned that tonight, and I assume that this was not kayfabed. I mean, he was talking about the wedding as being his real wedding. He said the wedding on the show tonight was their real wedding. Now, I'm almost positive. Well, I'll mention who it was in a second. I was going to mention the wedding officiant. The wedding officiant that we had on the show tonight, I'm almost positive that he might well be a licensed officiant. So it is very possible that the wedding we saw tonight on TV was a real wedding. He said that his parents and her parents, they understood why they couldn't be there. Hopefully down the line, they'll do something so both their families can be there. So what we saw tonight may well have been their real wedding. It may have been their real nuptials. But who did they bring in as the official, well, the officiant for the wedding? They brought in the sinister minister, James Mitchell. This guy was born to be a performer on TV. Everything about this guy is pure evil. Just the way he looks, his voice, the fucking eyebrows. This guy is like Lucifer in the flesh. Him as the manager, like an evil heel manager in pro wrestling, like he was born to be in that role. Him and Abyss. In a lot of ways, I mean, that was the Kane and Paul Bearer of TNA. But it was, like for TNA, it was a perfect union. Just like in WWE, Undertaker and Paul Bearer, Kane and Paul Bearer, perfect union. Sinister Minister was awesome, and then he just disappeared off the face of the earth. Every now and then he'll pop up again. But that voice. Jerry Lynn walked Penelope Ford to the ring. She was looking amazing. Penelope Ford is a beautiful woman. She was looking very radiant tonight. Kip Sabian is a lucky man. So they went into the exchanging of the vows and just some brief vows here from Kip Sabian saying, "You are beautiful on the inside." And he goes, "Damn, you're hot on the outside." And the Sinister Minister was agreeing with everything that Kip Sabian was saying, because how could you not? I mean, he's standing 2 feet away from this woman. She's like glowing. The Sinister Minister, I mean, he was probably thinking very unpure thoughts in his head at that time. I mean, he is, after all, the Sinister Minister. So I can only imagine what was going through his head. So then she starts talking and saying that you have the biggest, and then he cut her off, which I don't know why you would do that. If it were me, I'd be like, yeah, tell the world, you know, but he cut her off and said, "Look, I know how much you want to spend we want to spend our lives together." So we get to the point in the wedding where Father James Mitchell says, "If anybody objects to this union," you know the part, right? "If anybody has anything to say, speak now or forever hold your peace." And Miro cuts him off. Miro interjects. And I thought this was kind of, kind of clever. He says, no. "I've been here before. We're not going to do that again. Let's move on." Kind of a wink and a nod to that awful fucking garbage that he was involved in his dying days in WWE. He knows a thing or two about shitty wrestling weddings. Mitchell continues on, "I now pronounce you ball and chain." And the bride and groom share a kiss, or if you could call it that. I mean, they were shoving their tongues down each other's throat. So Miro wants to do a toast. Miro is the best man. And he orders Chuck the butler, because Chuck Taylor was there, Charles the butler. And he orders Chuck the butler to bring over the champagne. "Let's bring over some champagne." Remember the Continental from Saturday Night Live? One of my all-time favorite sketches with Christopher Walken. The Continental. You bring the lady into his apartment, sit her down, and try to make a move, and she would rebuff him, and then he would whip out a rag and say, "Would you like some chloroform?" And she would smack him and go for the door. I don't know why I just thought of that. It just made me think of the Continental. I think because that's how he used to say champagne. He used to call it champagne. So now I always say it that way. Some champagne. Anyway. Miro looks over in the corner of the ring. And he sees a giant gift box. And so it's distracting him. And he wants to know who brought that gift. Who is that gift from? And Chuck says, "That's mine. It's from me." And Miro says, "Oh, it's from you." And he immediately goes over to the box and he kicks it and he's bashing it because he probably figures somebody's inside the box, right? That's what probably everybody was thinking. So he destroys the box. There's nothing in it. I mean, the box is flying around. It doesn't look like there's anything in it. He throws it outside the ring. And at this point, the crowd begins to sing. Now, I couldn't pick up on what they were singing at first. But Miro starts to acknowledge it and sing it. It's What Is Love by Hathaway, which is a song that every, you know, when I think of that, you think of the scene in the car, right? Night at the Roxbury, head back and forth, right? Again, old fart, I'm telling you. You got people who are watching this right now who go, Night at the what? What are you talking about? What is love by who? Stop listening to Bad Bunny and go listen to some Hathaway. There you go. You can thank me later. That song is, every time I play, like a play like a 90s mega mix or something, that fucking song always plays. Like, always. And there's like 10 different remix versions of it. So I definitely did not expect that, but that was cool to hear the crowd singing that. So then, Miro, while he's talking, he doesn't realize that he has been shackled. His leg has been shackled to the bottom rope. He has been cuffed to the bottom rope, and Chuck shoves Sabian, who then inadvertently knocks into his wife, and Penelope goes face first into the cake, because there's a giant cake on a table in the ring. She goes face first into the cake again. So now this is the second week. Is it in a row? When was the birthday party for Negative One? Was that last week or the week before? But for the second time in either 2 or 3 weeks here, we've had another person go face first into a cake. So now it's cake overkill on this show. We don't need any more cakes on Dynamite. But Sabian then tried to attack Chuck. Chuck ducked. And Sabian struck Miro, who looked like he was about to explode. But he couldn't do anything because he was shackled to the rope. And Sabian's apologizing. I'm sorry, I didn't mean it. So now Penelope jumps on Chuck's back, and that allows Sabian to start kicking Chuck. Orange Cassidy pops out of the wedding cake. Pops out of the wedding cake. Hey, Mr. Delgado in the chat, you got a problem with Hathaway? I'm telling people, everybody's been talking about Bad Bunny this week. I'm sure Bad Bunny is fine. Okay, forget Bad Bunny for a second. Go listen to some other music that you may not have been exposed to before. That's all I'm saying. Don't get all bent out of shape about your Bad Bunny. Okay, we're going to see Bad Bunny in the ring probably at WrestleMania in a few months. All right, we're not going to see Hathaway in the ring. But go listen to the song. Okay, it's good. It's good shit. I can give you a whole 90s playlist. I could tell you, I can give you a whole list of things to go listen to. Probably better than half the shit that's out there now. And I like some of the shit that's out there now, but some of it, ugh, not so much. But Orange Cassidy pops out of the cake, and he very appropriately hits the beach break on Kip. They put some kind of surface down in the ring. I don't know if it was made of bamboo or what it was made out of. But Kip was out, and that was the end of the segment. This was your typical wrestling wedding bullshit that you would expect. It went almost exactly the way that I thought it would. The only difference is I was thinking they would find a way to get Trent involved. So Trent would either be in the box or Trent would pop out of the cake. I mean, I figured Orange Cassidy would show up as well. But I guess with Trent, I mean, the injury he has, it is still very early for him to be doing anything physical. So that really was the only thing that I figured would happen that didn't, though. Went exactly the way you would have expected it to. I thought it was very cool to see the Sinister Minister. I always like seeing Father James Mitchell. He's always a fine presence on the show. But you know what? This wedding was hyped up now for a few months. And I know it wasn't like the feature story on the show every single week. But they've been hyping this wedding now for quite a while. And I just thought that for what we got here, it was more underwhelming than anything else. I'm not going to sit here and tell you it was the worst wrestling wedding I've ever seen. That is absolutely not the case. I have seen far worse weddings on television. But it also wasn't great. It was just like, all right, this went exactly the way I figured it would. There were no real surprises. There were no real big shocks coming out of it. And in execution, it was pretty cheesy. So I don't really have anything else to say about it. Good to see the Sinister Minister, and that's about the only positive thing I can say. I did think for a second there, when Miro first grabbed the mic, after they kissed and they officially got married, and Miro was saying, you know, I know I didn't give you the bachelor party and I didn't get you a gift, but I'm your gift. I'm giving you the gift of violence and all this stuff that he was talking about. I thought he was going to beat the fuck out of Kip Sabian and basically be the Miro that a lot of people have been hoping that he would be. You know, like, yeah, I've been doing this and, yeah, I've been your friend now for a while, but you know what? Now that this wedding is over, you know what? And then just fucking knock him into the middle of next week. So I thought he was going to turn on him, and he did. Now, he might still end up doing that, but it didn't happen. For a second there, I thought he was just going to, like, destroy this guy and then eat some cake and go to the back. But it didn't quite work out that way. Now people are talking about Nickelback. Well, get me started on that. I think Nickelback gets a lot of hate they don't deserve. One of the best Monday Night Raw songs, and Raw has had a lot of songs over the years. I'm still quite partial to the original instrumental that they use at the very beginning. Raw's had some good songs, but among the best ones I think that they've ever had is the Nickelback song. So you can fight me on that. You can disagree with me on that. You can hate all you want. Everybody who hates on Nickelback, secretly they're listening to some Nickelback. I guarantee you, they're secretly listening to some Nickelback songs. You look on their playlist on their phone, they got some Nickelback on there. Guaranteed. It's a lot of unwarranted hate that they get. Chris Quillman, wants to know, have you heard Negative One's commentary on Dark? I did. I heard Negative One's commentary on Dark, and I thought that he did a hell of a job, actually. The kid's got chops. He's definitely got some chops. He's got some chops on promos, and he's got some chops on commentary as well. I was very impressed by the job that he did, especially when he told Excalibur to shut up. And then he had one other line. He made a comment about something about the Dark Order guy, his opponent, not knowing what hell was or something. I thought he did a hell of a job. It is official. Cody Rhodes will be tagging with Red Velvet to take on Shaquille O'Neal and Jade Cargill. Not at Revolution, but on the March 3rd episode of Dynamite on TNT. They had a recap of Shaq accepting Cody's challenge. He was on the set of Inside the NBA with Kenny and Charles. And he stood up, but he wanted to show what his finishing move would be. And now they have the plastic or plexiglass dividers, I guess, because they're all socially distanced. But he gets up and he walks over to one of the plexiglass barriers, and he's like, not almost knocking it over, but he's delivering what he says would be what he calls the Black Tornado, which is basically like a spinning back elbow that he would use to do sometimes when he was on the court and he used to be an active player. Basically the Judas Effect. His move is basically the Judas Effect. And this is the move that he plans to use in his match against Cody and Red Velvet. Now, you might be wondering, why the hell are they doing this on Dynamite 4 days before they're having a pay-per-view? And I told you last week, I mentioned it while I was doing last week's review, that there was a lot of chatter. I don't even know if it's still official yet or not. I don't know if any formal announcement has been made. But the NBA, a week ago, there was a lot of chatter that they were talking about doing an All-Star game on March 7th. The March 7th happens to be the date of the AEW Revolution pay-per-view. And so I have to assume the reason they're doing this not on the pay-per-view, but they're doing it on TV, is because Shaq is going to be needed on the night of the All-Star game, if the All-Star game moves forward. And so if you can't do it then, and it's March 3rd or not at all, then they opted to do it on March 3rd. And why not? They could try to pop a rating out of it. If you can't do it on the pay-per-view, the least you can do is try to pop a number. So I would be 99.9% sure that's the reason why it's happening on TV and not on Dynamite or not on the pay-per-view. But we are getting the match now. It is official. We're going to see Shaquille O'Neal in the ring, hopefully not for very long. Maybe he'll do some of that Shaq Fu. The shorter, the better. The real shine here ought to be on Red Velvet. I have not seen a whole lot of Red Velvet. Again, I do not watch Dark every single week. Red Velvet has not had very many matches on Dynamite. So I don't really know how good this woman is or isn't. Jade Cargill, I've never seen her wrestle a single match before. They had a video package for her tonight showing her like a training vignette. So she is clearly in tremendous physical shape. That's terrific. Can she wrestle? No fucking idea. Never saw her in the ring before. And they're the ones, I mean, Cody doesn't need the rub. Shaq doesn't need the rub. He's there hopefully to give them some of the rub in the form of maybe some extra eyeballs. We'll see. Maybe it'll be a bust and Dynamite that night will do the usual 750 or 800,000 they normally do. But the shorter, the better. Because you have on the side of Shaq and Jade, two people who have virtually no experience in the ring. So this match does not need to go very long. This should be like a Goldberg match. That's what this should be. That's what this should be. There'll be a lot of stalling and posing and stuff with Cody and Shaq. You're not going to get a lot of holds. You're not going to get a lot of lockups. You're going to get a lot of staring. You're going to get a lot of, like I said, taunting and stalling and things of that nature. But we are going to finally get to see Jade Cargill and what the big deal is about her and how she looks in the ring. Eddie Kingston against Lance Archer. In a lumberjack match, one of my least favorite match stipulations. I feel like we've seen, I don't know, over the past 6 months, 12 months, I feel like we've seen more lumberjack matches than we need to be seeing. And it's always just mass chaos, hard to keep track of what's going on, you hardly pay attention to what's going on in the ring. Butcher and Blade were out there, they tripped up Archer and beat him down. Archer fought them off. He tried to chokeslam Peter Avalon, who was out there. But Avalon escaped. Archer went headfirst into the ring post. So Kingston got sent outside the ring as well. Billy Gunn was there. Sent him back into the ring immediately. Kingston still went after the Butcher and the Blade on the outside. Big brawl broke out. Archer dove out onto the pile. Archer is a big dude. He's like a legit 6'6", 6'7". And he went flying out of the ring on a dive. Everyone must dive. That should be his catchphrase. He comes out, he says, everybody dives or everybody dies. No, everybody dives should be his new catchphrase. So out he goes over the top. We come back from break. We have the bunny running into the ring and she hops on Lance Archer's back. See what I did there? Archer was going to go and hit her with the blackout. Eddie Kingston, though, hit a spinning back fist, and that took down Lance Archer. In the middle of all of this havoc and all of this chaos, Jake Roberts, who is at ringside, and Jake is definitely bigger than he was a year ago. I get the sense that Jake is maybe not doing as much DDP yoga as he used to. And it's tough, too, because we know he has, you know, he's had breathing problems. He's talked about COPD and all that stuff. So, you worry about the guy. But he looked like he was back in his element tonight when he went over to Serpentico and he threw a punch at Serpentico. Now, in so doing, he also fell over. But he had a big smile on his face. He seemed to be okay. I was ready for the DDT, but I guess his DDTing days are probably over at this point. So Jake didn't want to be left out. He got in on the action. Blade set up a table in the ring when Bear Bronson of Bear Country. It's a team on AEW Dark. I'm almost positive this is the first time Bear Country has even been mentioned on Dynamite. So he had a spot here, ran in and speared him through the table. Blade, I think it was. So Archer hit a big Uranage for a near fall. Eddie Kingston goes to the top rope. Archer cuts him off, hits the blackout for the win. Again, I am really tired of seeing lumberjack matches. It is one of my least favorite match stipulations. The action with Archer and Kingston was fine. You know, it wasn't anything you have to go out of your way to see. But look, it's two guys who felt like they were in a fight. So when we see these two guys, whether they're in a heated promo or they're in the ring together, it never feels like they're working together to put on a match. It's two guys who feel like they're out there to beat the living hell out of each other. And that I like. I like that dynamic between the two of them. You didn't need all the lumberjack bullshit on the outside. You really didn't need that. You didn't need Bear Country. You didn't need Bear Bronson and all of the extracurricular stuff. You can give Jake his spot, I guess, but I could have done without all that. I didn't need all the outside nonsense. We had a promo pre-taped. I don't know where they were. It looked like they were on a bus or something, or in the back. Tully Blanchard and FTR. Now remember, FTR were suspended for a week. They were not allowed in the Battle Royal because they cut the horns off the dinosaur last week. So they were not very happy about that. They were sitting on a couch. And Cash Wheeler said that he hopes Jack, that being Jungle Boy, didn't run to the principal's office to snitch on them, and that's why they got suspended. Tully Blanchard said FTR, they are the best team in wrestling, and they deserve a tag team title shot. Dax Harwood said that we're not bad guys, but sometimes, you know, we have to do what bad people do. And all of a sudden, they pan back. Well, they didn't even pan back. They kind of pull the chair into view, and who is taped to the chair but Marco Stunt? They've kidnapped Marco, and I do mean kidnapped Marco Stunt. They had his mouth taped shut. This was glorious. And he's trying to break out of the chair, and he's wrestling around, and Tully Blanchard gets up in his face. So they kidnap the kid, and they're going to do unspeakable things to him. That was the segment. Then we get to the main event. John Moxley teaming with Pac and Rey Fénix against Kenny Omega and the Impact World Tag Team Champions, the Good Brothers. Don Callis sat in on commentary. Penta, who they did an injury angle with him a couple of weeks ago to kind of take him out, which is why he wasn't here in this match. I think it was in the Observer he mentioned that there's some kind of a visa issue involving Penta. And that's tough because these visa issues, who the hell knows? Especially with everything going on, how long it'll take to get that resolved. So, I mean, it could be 2 weeks before we see Pentagon, or it could be 6 months. There's no way of knowing. So it could be a while before we see Penta back on TV. But I thought these guys had a hell of a main event. This was all action. Skipping ahead a little bit later in the match, Omega, Anderson, and Gallows, they were triple teaming Pac. Omega hit a Liger Bomb, Pac kicked out. V-Trigger connects, and Pac slips out from the one-winged angel attempt. Now it was Moxley and Pac and Fénix who were triple-teaming Omega. Pac gets a deadlift German to Omega for a near fall. Fénix. Rey Fénix is a crazy bastard. You probably already knew that. He does the, and when I say, you know, they call it a suicide dive, and I know Excalibur's always do using the technical terms, Tope con Hero and Tope Suicida. It's a suicide dive. But the only one I've ever seen who truly embodies the name of the move is Rey Fénix, because it's almost as if he doesn't care. Now, Darby Allin, I guess I'll give it to Darby Allin. Darby Allin does the same thing, where when he does the dive through the ropes, and I think with Darby, sometimes it's through the like the bottom ropes, he also just kind of throws his body out there like a madman. But Rey Fénix just kind of puts a little more oomph into it, where he almost landed in the front row. Every week when he does this, he almost lands in the front row. How he doesn't and how he doesn't just smack against the guardrail and kill himself, I'll never know. But if you're going to do a dive, then you got to just go for it. And that's what I appreciate. That's what I like about it. That's why I wish only he and Darby and like a handful of people would even be allowed to do these things. Jungle Boy, maybe. If you're going to do a dive, you got to make it look like it would actually hurt the other person. Like, you're trying to take this guy's head off. You're not doing it to look pretty. You're not doing it to get caught in the pile. You're doing it to take this guy's fucking head off of his shoulders. And Darby and Phoenix are two of the only guys, when they do this, where it looks truly devastating. But it looks devastating to both the recipient and the person delivering the move. So that was a bit of a rough landing for Phoenix, but he did that crazy dive onto Karl Anderson. There was a paradigm shift by Kenny Omega to Jon Moxley. Pac broke it up with a 450 off the top rope. Karl Anderson tried for the gun stun to Moxley. Moxley dodged the move, hit one of his own. Phoenix tagged in. Anderson hit him with a very, very nice Arn Anderson-esque spine buster. And the Good Brothers hit the magic killer to Phoenix, and that's all she wrote. The heels pick up the win. Lance Archer sprints out. He wipes out all the heels. He takes Gallows and brawls outside the ring with him. So that leaves only two men left in the ring. Kenny Omega, who's down, and Jon Moxley, who has now risen to his feet. And Jon Moxley is licking his chops. He's about to get his hands on Kenny Omega when all of a sudden a man in a face mask and a winter cap attacks Moxley from behind. He pulls the hat off. He pulls the mask off. And it's Kenta from New Japan Pro Wrestling. He's wearing a phrase on it was like a go to sleep or go to Kenta something shirt, like a play off the go to sleep name. He was wearing that on his shirt. Oh, I think it was go to sleep club. That's what it was. A play off the Bullet Club, go to sleep club. And so it's Kenta. He picks up Jon Moxley and hits the go to sleep and lays out Jon Moxley in the middle of the ring to end this episode of Dynamite. Dynamite ended tonight with a New Japan star, laying out the former world champion for their own company, the man who probably is going to challenge Kenny Omega again for that championship at Revolution. And also the man who is challenging Moxley for the IWGP United States title later this month. Again, I think February 26th episode of New Japan Strong. They're doing a couple of weeks, I think a couple of special episodes of New Japan Strong, which I think New Japan Strong generally, it airs on New Japan World. It has English commentary and Japanese commentary. I think it's taped out in California, and they have a lot of younger talent and American, you know, like Gaijin talent. But I think for a couple of weeks later on this month, it's like a special episode. And so that's going to be one of the big feature matches on one of those weeks. They're finally going to get the match done. Kenta has been the number one contender. He has been carrying around a briefcase for the right to challenge for the U.S. title for about 5 months now. Like literally 5 or 6 months, he's been carrying that briefcase around. Because of the pandemic, it's wreaked havoc with all their plans, and Moxley has not been able to travel over to Japan to defend the title. As I understand it, Moxley has his deal with New Japan. He can go over to Japan and have as many matches as he wants, but he's not allowed to wrestle for another company like New Japan on U.S. soil. But now he is. So some kind of agreement, some kind of arrangement clearly has been reached between the two sides. It could very well just be, look, we don't know when we're going to be able to get you back here. You've had the title for so long, we don't just want to strip you of it. We want you to put our guy over. So let's just work something out this one time. Moxley showed up on New Japan Strong, I think last week, made a surprise appearance. This could have been their payback for that. And they have just given permission for him to drop the belt. And maybe that's going to be the end of it for now. That's very possible. On the other hand, it could be that this is the beginning of a beautiful friendship between the two sides. And that's what I hope this is, because it is so incredibly dumb to me that we still have not had any interaction between the two companies. There's been no attempt to work together. I think the desire is there. Clearly the desire is there, and they know a lot of their fan base would love to see it. So it's only a matter of time. Maybe we have finally reached that point. But that was pretty exciting to see Kenta show up on the show tonight, and just to think about who else we might be able to see on Dynamite. You know, a few months from now, we could be seeing matches that when they had Serena Deeb and Thunder Rosa first come over, they had Allison Kay. Although Allison Kay, when she came in to do the match in AEW, I think she was a free agent. I think she was just let out of her NWA contract at that point. So I don't think that she was an NWA talent at that point anymore. But it's just something I think that has been asked for a while. I think people have been waiting for it, and we might finally have it. And they mentioned the fact, you know, Kenta is a Bullet Club member. And we've seen Omega and the Good Brothers, who used to be in Bullet Club, talking up Bullet Club every week. Well, now we have an actual Bullet Club member show up on Dynamite. Is Kenta going to be back on the show next week, palling around with Don Callis and Kenny Omega, and palling around with Anderson and Gallows? Are we going to have a mixing of the three companies effectively working together, AEW, Impact, and New Japan? So when you think about those possibilities, unless you just have absolutely no attachment, no interest in that product at all, and that's fine, I get that. Some people don't really give a shit about the Impact stuff because they're just not into Impact. And there's a lot of people who probably feel the same way about New Japan. But it is exciting, though, to see these companies at least opening the door to work with each other. And as Jacob, my boy Jacob, who's joining us tonight, mentioned in his super chat a little bit earlier, it is kind of crazy to think about what we saw tonight. That we had talent on the show from four different, you know, what you would consider major promotions. Promotions that either have TV or in their respective country are very big. AEW, Impact, NWA, which isn't that big anymore, but NWA and New Japan. So, very exciting ending to the show tonight to what I thought was a great main event and a great cliffhanger to get people talking. That is for sure. I see it just in the chat alone right here. You got a lot of people talking about what happened at the end of the show tonight. And that is a surefire way to try to get people to tune in the following week. It's smart. Very cool stuff. I had a big grin on my face when I saw Kenta do the big reveal. So I thought there might be a chance of it, but it wasn't anything I was really actively thinking, all right, tonight we're going to get Kenta on the show. But I'm kicking myself because after Moxley showed up on the other show, I should have seen it coming. I should have figured, you know what, we're probably going to get a Kenta appearance tonight. But I just didn't think it would happen. But it looks like people were pretty satisfied with what they saw on Dynamite tonight, just based on these poll results. Almost 85% of you giving the show a thumbs up. So that is a pretty damn good percentage there. 15% thumbs down. Undertaker doesn't seem very enthusiastic. Undertaker is looking at the NXT numbers. I see. Undertaker is looking at those NXT poll results. NXT poll, 65% thumbs up, 34.7% thumbs down. And that is for a show, by the way, where Edge was making an appearance tonight. And I don't know what happened. I'm going to check out the show tomorrow. But they were promoting an appearance by Edge for tonight's NXT show. Edge was making his NXT debut. Of course, his wife already does commentary every week on NXT. And, you know, it's easy to see what they're doing. We had Edge on Raw Monday night, teasing the possibility of a WrestleMania match with Drew McIntyre. Tonight, he probably did the same thing, I'm guessing, with Finn Balor. And I would expect Edge to be on SmackDown Friday night and do the same thing with Roman Reigns. Plant the seed with every single major champion in the company until he finally makes his decision, and he makes the right decision, which is he goes to WrestleMania to challenge Roman Reigns, because that should be the WrestleMania match. And then he will lose. Because not every story has a happy ending. That's a good life lesson for all the kids who watch these shows. The good guy does not always win in the end. But damn it, He's going to go to WrestleMania. He's going to try to knock off the Tribal Chief, but he'll fall just a little bit short. That's the match. That is the match to do at WrestleMania. Now, next Wednesday on Dynamite, we've got on tap the TNT title on the line. Darby Allin defending against Joey Janela. MJF and Chris Jericho take on the Acclaimed. And Cody Rhodes teams up with Lee Johnson to take on Peter Avalon and Cesar Bonanni. I've not seen Cesar Bonanni. I know he was on Dark some time ago, but last time I saw him in action, he was still with NXT. That's how long it's been since I've seen this guy. But he had, you know, he had something. He has the size. He's a big tall kid. His wrestling seemed okay. Kind of like Tay Conti. I don't quite understand why they would let people like that go. The Tay Conti one is still a mystery to me, because she definitely has something and is an athlete, very talented, wanted to do more, wanted to grow, and they weren't doing anything with her, and then they cut her and they let her go. I think it was part of the cuts that they made in April last year. But even before the COVID cuts, they weren't doing anything with her. It was just puzzling, just baffling to me. So that's one of the reasons why I'm hoping we see big things from her in AEW. Just to kind of show the other side, hey, look what you had, and you let it go. So we'll see Cesar, I guess, in action next week on the show. Oh yeah, we got a lot of questions and a lot of comments about the show tonight. Get those super chats in. I will read every single one that you guys send me. Real quick, before we get to that, before we get to all of that and all your questions, we do have a little bit of business here to transact. I did mention a little bit earlier that on our Facebook group, every year, we have a Royal Rumble pool. Thank you, Ken. Oh, I know you did. That's one of the random chats. I know you didn't plan for that, but I do love that super chat. Look at that Ultimate Warrior. But yes, we have the Royal Rumble pool. This was the 8th annual Rumble pool in our Facebook group. 60 pools. We had over 2,000 people participating. And now I get to choose the 3 top winners to win the prizes as outlined in the Facebook group. And it's very simple. I paste them into this box. You guys are going to get to see me do this drawing live right now here on the air. I'm going to play a little drum roll here. And when I hit that randomize button, the first 3 names on the list, in that order, those are your prize winners. So if you are one of the pool winners who won on Sunday, your name is on this list. Pay attention to number 1, number 2, and number 3. Because if you are number 3, you're the third place winner. If you're number 2, you're the second place winner. And if you're number 1, well, you're not dumb. You know what that means. So without any further ado, find out who the winners are. Hunter Paw, you are the number 1 top winner in this year's Royal Rumble Ultimate Pool. Number 2 is Rick Hutton. And number 3 is Mark Hinton. Those are your winners. Hunter, Rick, and Mark. You got 3 dudes on top in the top 3 spots. But congratulations to those guys. You are the ultimate Rumble Pool winners. You'll love to see it. Always fun. Always fun doing the Royal Rumble Pool. I drew number 21 this year. I'm trying to remember, who was number 21 in the Men's Rumble? I don't remember. I don't think it was anybody good, though. They didn't win, that's for sure. I would be pissed, though, if you drew number 2. Because originally, Edge was going to be number 2 in the Rumble. And for whatever reason, the next day after announcing it, WWE switched it. And Edge came out at number 1. So if you drew number 2 in the Rumble pool, you've got to be pissed. Because that should have been a win for you. But hey, leave it to WWE to fuck you over, I guess, right? What are you going to do? Anyway, again, congrats to all the winners. Very happy to do the live drawing here and pick those names out. All right, so like I said, we have a lot of your super. We're going to scroll all the way back here. I'm going to read your comments. You send in super chats. Let me just say, first and foremost, whether it's $2 or $200, thank you, because we've gotten a couple of those too recently. Thank you, guys. Got a lot of support during the Royal Rumble stream on Sunday night. That was a tremendous show. It was so much fun that night too, because we had so many people in there and so many people just shooting messages, not even just super chats, but just going back and forth in the chat. So a lot of interaction on the Rumble stream. We had at one point almost 3,000 people tuned in live. So it was a really good time. You guys showed a lot of love on Sunday, so I want to thank you for that. So I think we talked about Chris. We left off with our buddy Oz. Oz Inglorious. By the way, I did see a news item the other day that we are getting a supposedly. I haven't heard anything official, so I'm still a little skeptical. But everybody was reporting on the proper sequel to the movie Cloverfield. So you might notice above my shoulder there. That's the original poster for the first movie. So I am hoping that news is legitimate, because we have been overdue for a proper sequel for about 13 years now. So Oz Inglorious, thank you for the $5. Jacob Donnelly, again with that awesome comment earlier. He makes a great point. Prince Walker, I called Kenta showing up, especially when Mox was okay, New Japan, everyone relax, the wrestling connected universe is happening. There's a lot of excitement. There's a lot of genuine excitement amongst fans of both promotions. Just very cool to see that level of enthusiasm. Because it's not very often that you see this kind of working relationships between companies, but I think coming out of this pandemic, and I think actually Kota Ibushi said something about this recently, where, and maybe Okada did, where coming out of this, you know, a lot of companies are going to be worse for wear. Yes, WWE is still making billions of dollars, so they're going to be fine. But there's a lot of companies smaller than WWE and AEW that maybe aren't going to be so fine. And if working together with other companies or bigger companies and putting fantasy matches together people never expected to see, if that's something we get more of in the future going forward, I don't look at that as a bad thing at all. I think that would actually, I think it would actually be very, very nice to see companies working together in that way to kind of provide, I don't call them supercards, but just sort of that interpromotional type stuff, just to get people excited about wrestling again. Because there has been a waning of enthusiasm, I think, kind of overall, and I'm sure they've all been hit business-wise by everything that's been going on. So again, I just think everybody benefits. When you got them coming together, working together this way, everybody benefits. Scott Woodford, AEW, New Japan, Impact Wrestling, oh my. Dry Chicken, I'm back, Solomonster. Bullet Club for life. I didn't know you left. I thought you were here the whole time. Where'd you go? Well, I'm glad you're back. The Cheeseburger, this wedding between Sabian and Penelope is so beautiful. I have tears on my glass eyes. Jacob Barnes, I know you think Omega should eventually drop the belt to Hangman. I agree. But after Revolution and the Moxley feud is over, who do you think he should defend his title against? We'll see if they do anything with Rich Swann to go back to the working stuff with Impact again. I do think we'll probably get a singles match between them at some point. Is it going to be on an AEW show? Or is it going to be on an Impact pay-per-view? They have one coming up in April. That I don't know. Probably on the Impact pay-per-view would be my guess. So as I look at the AEW roster and I look for a babyface that could believably challenge Kenny Omega for the championship, I'll tell you, I wouldn't mind seeing someone like Pac elevated to that position. Not that he would win the title, although I could see him being champion at some point. Now is not that time. I think Pack is someone who would be considered. I think Lance Archer, honestly. They seem to finally be giving Archer the big push that he's been lacking now for a while. He was lacking television time. We barely got to see him on TV. They didn't know what to do with this guy. And he knocks off Eddie Kingston tonight, and then we see him show up in the main event. And that might have been your first clue about where they're going to be heading in the future with Lance Archer. So you put me on the spot. Who do I think would probably be next in line? Lance Archer. Probably Lance Archer. Khalid, Adam, thoughts on Thunder Rosa losing to Britt tonight? No problem with it, because it's only the beginning of wherever they're going with this, and there's going to be a rematch. It might be in the tournament. This is not the final time we're going to see these two in the ring together. And she had a cheat to win. It's not like she pinned her clean in the middle of the ring. But also remember, Britt Baker is an AEW talent, and Thunder Rosa is not. Thunder Rosa is an NWA talent who is being allowed to compete and to perform on someone else's show. And so when you really drill down to it, as much as I love Thunder Rosa and I want to see her do well, you've got to put your own talent over and think about your own talent. So it kind of makes sense that you would want Britt Baker to go over, but she went over in a heel way. Thunder Rosa lost nothing. Thunder Rosa looked great in this match tonight. And it is not the last time we are going to see these two in the ring together. Lord Frieza, Solomonster, I feel guilty for not being able to stay too long. I know it may not be the time, but thanks for suggesting that Yokozuna documentary. It was great. It was. And I'm going to talk more about that. I'll give my thoughts on the Yokozuna thing on Sunday. If you have not seen it, WWE Icons, it's almost like their answer to Dark Side of the Ring. It's their own documentary series. And this Yokozuna story would have been perfect. Having watched this episode now, it would have been a perfect addition to the Season 3 lineup for Dark Side of the Ring, because it is a very tragic story, you know, the way it ends up. But it was very good, very well done, and I think the next one maybe is on Beth Phoenix. They have more on Lex Luger and Rob Van Dam, and I think the British Bulldog is all part of Season 1. There might be one more, I'm not remembering. But I would definitely recommend you check it out. It's a little over an hour, maybe like an hour and 20 minutes. They interview his family, his friends, a lot of members of the Samoan dynasty. This family, my God, how big is this friggin' family? So they interview a lot of people for it, including Vince McMahon. They get some comments from him as well. And by the way, my God, what has happened to Vince McMahon? I understand he's 75 years old. I'm not even talking about the way he looks, right? Like, physically, he still keeps himself in great shape. Facially, I don't know what the fuck he's done to himself. He's had ungodly work done. I don't know why. I don't know what exactly he did, but he looks like a wax figure. But forget that for a second. That voice. What has happened to that iconic Vince McMahon voice? He sounds like he chain smoked for 30 years. And I know he didn't, because he is notorious for not liking anybody sneezing around him, but also not liking cigarette smoke. So I don't think he was a smoker, aside from the occasional cigar. It sounds like he's gargling gravel. You can barely understand what he's saying. I miss the old Vince McMahon voice. I don't know what this is. I have to like lean in and really listen hard when he talks to understand what he's saying. It's sad. Very sad. Dry Chicken, AEW needs to bring in the six-man tag team titles. They will. They will. We're going to have six-man belts this year at some point. I believe that. Rodimus Prime, thank you, brother, for the $45, man. That's awesome. Missed the show tonight, but heard what happened at the end. Can't wait for Moxley and Kenta on the 26th. Darius Smith, Kenta took a long-ass flight to do one move. He could have at least beat him down more. Well, look, I mean, Kenta, I could be wrong about this, but I believe Kenta lives in Florida. So unless he was just in Japan on one of the New Japan shows, and I mean, maybe then he did fly in, but I believe he lives here. So again, I could be wrong, but that was my impression, is that he either lives or has a home in Florida. So I don't really think he minds too much. Dry Chicken, something tells me that Sting will actually compete in the ring at AEW Revolution with Darby for the street fight. He may end up in a ring, but that doesn't mean it won't be a cinematic match. What you're saying is it won't be cinematic and it will actually be in the ring. It's possible. Sting himself is the one who said that the discussion he had with Tony Khan was about cinematic. So that's what I'm basing it on. I'm just basing it on what he said he talked to Tony Khan about. The agreement was that they would do cinematic matches. So they could do a cinematic match or a pre-tape match where they're in the ring, I suppose, but if it's edited a certain way, maybe he doesn't have to do as much. Remember, this guy has not had a match in over 5 years. Five and a half, almost 5.5 years. The match with Seth Rollins at Night of Champions in 2015, that was his last match. It's over 5 years. 61 years old now. With whatever the condition is that he has, spinal stenosis, I guess. Whatever he's going to do, it can't be too much. He can throw punches and kicks and do stuff like that, but I don't expect to see him taking bumps. Or if he does, they'll kind of shoot around it. Kurt Angle talked about this, actually. Kurt Angle, when he came back to WWE, Kurt Angle wanted to wrestle. Kurt Angle did not want to be a general manager. Kurt Angle did not want to be an announcer. He wanted to wrestle. And his plan was, I'm going to come back, I'll wrestle for maybe another year, and then I'll have my retirement match at WrestleMania, and then go into the Hall of Fame. And Vince McMahon said, I want to make you the general manager of Raw. And that was not what Kurt wanted to do, but he did it. And he said what ended up happening is because he wasn't wrestling and he wasn't taking bumps and he wasn't in the ring all the time, his body just, you know, you can't, like, if you're in the ring all the time and you're moving around and working and getting that body all calloused up and stuff, your body is kind of used to it. And the way he explained it, and it makes sense, is when you don't do that and you're getting older and you're as beat up as he is, your body just starts to stiffen up. And I'm sure he's got arthritis probably in every part of his friggin' body, his knees, his neck. So when he got called in to be part of the whole Shield thing, when Roman had, Roman and Bray, right? Didn't they get, what, bubonic plague or something? I forgot what it was. They came down with some kind of illness. And Kurt had to step in as a member of the Shield. And that's, you can just go back and watch it. And, you know, he's not able to move around the way he was, even when he was in those last days of his TNA run. Because he hadn't been in the ring in so long. So that's why he always looked so crippled up, like he could almost barely move. I mean, the best physically that Kurt looked in that comeback run in WWE is when he dressed up on Raw that one time as the fucking Conquistador. He was doing forward rolls, and he looked like he was having a fucking blast. And then he took the thing off, and I knew it was Kurt Angle, because all you had to do is look at the back, where the mask was like coming up. Kurt Angle's neck is just, it's like a mutant neck. His neck is absolutely gigantic. It is so swollen. So it was very obvious who was under the mask. But I remember that. I think, man, he's moving around pretty good. That's the best he looked. And he was in a freaking gold costume. He looked like a giant dick. But he never looked better. He looked like a good dick that night. So, hey, you know, look, but the point is, Sting hasn't been in the ring and taken bumps in over 5 years, and he's a lot older than Kurt Angle is. Now, he may not be as beat up as Kurt Angle is, but he's older. So there's going to be limitations to what he can do. You know, Father Time is the one opponent that these people cannot beat. Father Time is undefeated. Level 20. Hope AEW has a good side angle camera lens for Maki Ito's kayfabe big head. But seriously, I am excited for this tournament. Big Armada 1988. I admit not that familiar with Luther, but was he a better wrestler when he was younger and wrestling in Japan? Look, I'm hardly a Luther expert. I have gone back and watched some of his work, and I mean, nothing that I've seen. I would, hey, if somebody has a YouTube or a Daily Motion link to a great Luther match, then by all means, send it to me. But if there is one, I've never come across it. So I'm sure when he was younger, he probably had better matches than he did now. But again, I certainly have not seen one. Scott Woodford. Uncle Elmer Wedding was the first one I remember watching. Okay, good. So I'm not the only one. Dried Chicken, Undertaker, and Stephanie McMahon, Unholy Wedding. Original Project, with the $20. Thank you, sir. I don't understand how AEW can be such a mess, but be so damn entertaining at the same time. Some people would say the same thing about the dying days of WCW. It was a fucking mess. And some people were very entertained. Look, it's no different than when you're driving down the road and there's a horrible accident on the side of the road. What does everybody do? They slow down so they can watch the accident. That was WCW in the year 2000. Some people are just drawn to train wrecks. Doesn't mean it's a good television show. But with WCW, enough people clearly were not drawn to it because it wasn't, their audience was just so reduced from what it used to be. If people were enjoying the car crash, they would have still been drawing 3.0 ratings. They weren't drawing 3.0 ratings there at the end. Marcy with the $10. Taz and Excalibur on Dark are awesome. Santana and Ortiz are underrated. Thunder Rosa and Britt Baker match dragged a bit. Seemed like Rosa watered her moves for Britt. Love your show. Dried Chicken, I bet Kip Sabian and Penelope Ford are going to play some Barry White, Seal, and Kenny Loggins during their honeymoon. Jared M. with the $50 Super Chat Bomb here on the stream. I think that is probably the biggest one so far. We'll give Jared the confetti bath here. Jared, thank you, man. I appreciate that. I gave you confetti because I like you. I like Jared. Not in that way, but I, you know, as a friend. Jared wants to know, what the fuck is Bad Bunny? Oh, here we go. This has been the big debate on social media all week. People take this so seriously. Like, when I brought up Bad Bunny on the Royal Rumble stream, I mentioned I wasn't aware of who Bad Bunny was. Like, I didn't know what the fuck a Bad Bunny was. So what I did before the pay-per-view, I went and I looked him up, like any normal person would do. And I saw that the Booker T video had 45 million views, and I looked at some of his other stuff, and I said, all right, well, this guy obviously is a star somewhere, because his stuff has a lot of views and a lot of traffic. So in that world, he's a big name. I didn't know what Bad Bunny stood for, so I had to look that up, and I learned that when he was a kid, he went to school, he was forced to wear a bunny costume. I don't know the story behind that. Sounds like child abuse, but he was forced to wear a bunny costume, and somebody took a picture. He was photographed with a very angry expression on his face, and from that, Bad Bunny was born. That was the genesis of Bad Bunny. And now it looks like he's going to probably have a match at WrestleMania. Probably teaming up with Damian Priest against Miz and Morrison, at least. Look, if he's a big star, it's a great spot for Damian Priest to be in. I want Damian Priest to actually do well. I want him to do exactly the opposite of what Aleister Black has done and Ricochet has done since they've been called up to the main roster. I don't want to turn around in 9 months and see Damian Priest having matches every week on TV with T-Bag. So if putting him in the ring with Bad Bunny as his partner is some sort of endorsement of Damian Priest, then you know what? Put him in there with Bugs and Daffy and Elmer Fudd, all right, and Yosemite Sam and who was the big rooster guy? Cow, what's that guy's name? I forgot what his name is, the big rooster-looking guy. And a Roadrunner and all the... Put him in there with all of them, if it'll get this guy a big push. I want to see these guys do well. I don't want to see them buried 6 feet under. Brandon Morgan. Oh, look at the Fiend. Look at the Fiend. Char-grilled Fiend. You hate to see it. Brandon says, thank you, Foghorn Leghorn. I couldn't remember the name there. Foghorn Leghorn. I don't want to see Damian Priest end up like Foghorn Leghorn. They hate Nickelback because they've listened to it too many times. You know what? That's probably true. That's the only reason these people hate Nickelback, because they've just heard it too much. They've heard it too much. Ken terminated. I'd rather listen to Maroon 5 over Nickelback. Well, Maroon 5's not terrible either. They're no Nickelback, but Maroon 5 is all right. Maroon 5 is okay. Leo Flores, welcome to Bear Country. Kayfabe for the win with the $5 super chat. Kenny Omega asked Tony to book him and Kenta against Archer and Mox in a lights out match next week. Okay, so there you go. It looks like Kenta's not only going to be on Dynamite next week, he's going to wrestle. Wow, in a lights out match too. I don't think we've seen one of those probably since the one with Omega and Moxley. Well, that's a hell of a main event if that's the case. Dop Dop with the $5 super chat. Fell asleep during Dynamite, but enjoyed Britt and Thunder Rosa. I've never been impressed with Britt's in-ring work, but she did well tonight. Dry Chicken, does everyone here agree Kenny Omega needs to change his theme song? Battle Cry by Little Five is great, but it doesn't fit his cleaner persona. I don't have an opinion one way or the other. I think his music is fine. Matthew Sun, thanks for all the hard work. Both shows felt off this week, but the dread wedding had its moment. I don't want to butcher his name. Cyriz Manson. I almost said Monsoon. Do you think have WWE fans switched to UFC over the year? I'm guessing that's what it says. Do you think that WWE fans switch to UFC over the... Maybe you can help decipher that. I think you've probably had a lot of WWE fans who started watching MMA a number of years ago and just ended up liking it more and probably went and said, look, instead of watching the fake stuff, I'm going to go watch the real shit. Because for a while there, UFC was on a real tear. You go back a number of years, they were having big pay-per-view after big pay-per-view. So yeah, I'm sure they did. I'm sure when UFC was really in their hot period, they attracted a lot of wrestling fans who probably didn't go back to WWE, because why would you? If you were that disenchanted with WWE that you left to go, or you decided, I'm going to take my money and instead of buying the WWE pay-per-view, I'm going to buy the UFC show. And then as the years have gone on, you see some of these shows, to then go back to WWE, why would you do that? I don't see those people coming back. It's like the lapsed fans. How many lapsed fans do you think actually came back? I'm sure a few did, but probably not many. Once you lose those people, it's very hard to get them back. It's not impossible, but it's very hard to get them back. Naif Alsafar, thank you for the $10, Naif. Good to hear from you. Ken terminated. Thank Christ the Edge versus Orton rivalry is done. Well, now that you said that, they're going to have to restart the whole thing. So thanks a lot, Ken. I'm going to blame you when they bring it back. Magician Sapphire wanted to donate before I go to sleep. Been a long day. Thank you. Food Hive. Haven't watched the show yet, but I had to come to the chat. Love the show. I'll watch the review later. What's up, guys? What's for dinner? What's for dinner? What's for dinner tonight actually was some leftover scallops and beef with vegetables from the Chinese restaurant. My favorite place on earth. The Chinese restaurant. Thank God they still deliver. I don't know what I would do with myself if they did. Jacob Barnes, I can't for the life of me get excited about this Cody and Shaq feud. Well, look, neither can I, and after March 3rd, it's going to be over. So just hang in there for one more month, and it'll be over. Turtlehead, if it's Roman and Edge, what is the WrestleMania main event? Well, it depends who Drew's opponent is. If you listened, if you watched my predictions for the Royal Rumble and then my Rumble review on Sunday, it sounds like they're going to want up to four marquee matches this year at WrestleMania because they have two nights. So the idea is that you'd have two big matches on night one, two big matches to promote on night two. The matches that I propose, and this is before the Rumble even, were Edge and Roman, and it looks like that's going to be the match. So I was, you know, pretty much bang on with that. Drew and John Cena was the other one that I pitched. Now, I've seen John Cena come out and say that it's going to be impossible for him to be at WrestleMania because he's in Canada filming something for the next 5 or 6 months. And with the COVID stuff and quarantine rules and everything, it just wouldn't be possible. John Cena has done this before. John Cena has done press in the past before WrestleMania saying, I'm not going to be there, I can't be there, and then he shows up. So he could be telling the truth, and it's also very possible that he's just working everybody. So I don't base anything off that one interview. I think we will see John Cena at WrestleMania this year. But will he be there in a big match? Because he's going to have to come back earlier and be on TV. If he was going to challenge Drew, he'd have to win the Elimination Chamber. Well, the Elimination Chamber is, what, 2 weeks away? It seems highly unlikely John Cena is going to win the Elimination Chamber. So I'm probably wrong on that one, but I had proposed Drew and Cena with the story of Cena going for number 17. And not winning. The other two matches I had pitched were Goldberg, who you know is going to probably be on the show, against Randy Orton. And Triple H against AJ Styles, because AJ has been very open about wanting to have a match with Triple H. So those were kind of the four mark. If you're going to have marquee matches with outside talent coming back and everything, those are the four that I proposed. Now, which one of those would actually headline the show? I would think if you did Drew and Cena, It could be either one. I mean, you could do Roman and Edge. I wouldn't have Edge win. So how do you want to end the show? Do you want to end the show with a babyface winning or not? If you do, then you do Drew and Cena. If you don't care, you headline with Edge and Roman Reigns. Look, Edge won the Royal Rumble. And I know that there are some years where whoever wins the Royal Rumble, the men's Rumble, does not go on to actually close out the show. I think that's bullshit. I think whether it's the men's Rumble or the women's Rumble, depending on which match is bigger, if you win the Royal Rumble, then you should be in the main event of WrestleMania. And they try to play games every year. Oh, you're in the main event of WrestleMania, but we'll open the show with you. Right? They did that with Edge and Alberto Del Dipshit back in 2011 when Edge defended the World Heavyweight title. And Sheamus won the Royal Rumble and he opened the show that year beating Daniel Bryan in 18 seconds. That's not the main event of WrestleMania. The main event of WrestleMania is the match that closes the show. Edge won the Royal Rumble. Edge should be in the final match on the card. I hate it when they play these fucking games. The Royal Rumble winner should be in the final match of the night. That's it. That's the way it should be. And if that's the case, then it's Edge and Roman Reigns. EJ. Now, Bad Bunny is way better than MGK and Flo Rida. And Dry Chicken, I missed this one. Fun fact, Bad Bunny performed at the Super Bowl halftime show last year. This year, I'm picking the Chiefs to win the Super Bowl. Oh, you're betting against Tom Brady. I was going to say Tom Terrific. There's only one Tom Terrific, and unfortunately he passed away last year, Tom Seaver. One of the best Mets of all time. Maybe the best Met of all time. But whether you like Tom Brady or you hate Tom Brady's guts, I just don't see how you can argue against the guy being the best, you know, in that position, the best of all time. Spit out some names that you think are better and why, right? I mean, some of you are probably bigger football fans than I am. But the success that this guy has had, I mean, come on. How do you argue against that? I got to go with Brady. I got to go with Tom Brady this weekend. If I had to make my Super Bowl prediction, there it is. I'm sorry to all the Chiefs, all the Chiefs fans. I'm sorry. I got to go with Brady. Eric says, Howard Johnson was better than Tom Seaver. I've stated Howard Johnson's before. Many years ago. Good old Hojo. Boogie says, he's definitely the best quarterback of all time, but I still hate him. And that's fine. You can hate him. You have every right to hate him. You have every right to hate him. But the talent that's there, can't really argue with success. Leaving one team for another, and the fucking guy is back in the Super Bowl. If I were in the NFL, I'd be pissed at this guy too. He would drive me nuts. Joe Montana. Yeah, I expect to get that answer. Joe Montana. I'm not going to get into that debate. You could be right. Joe Montana is a legend. But, yeah, that's my pick. That's my pick for the Super Bowl this weekend. Oh, we have Oz and Glorious dropping another $5 here on the stream. Peter Gabriel or Phil Collins? Also, what does your mug say? Peter Gabriel or Phil Collins? I got to go with Phil Collins. I mean, look, I love Sledgehammer and Big Time. WrestleMania 22, baby. It's one of my favorite WrestleMania songs, Big Time. I actually do think that's one of the better themes they've used over the years. But Phil Collins is great. Phil Collins is the man. Hold on a second here. What do we got going on here? Who we have? Uffman? Is that Uffman? Drop it a $10 super chat here, you crazy bastard. Pay attention to the commentary for the men's rumble. Kept harping that the winner would get to choose the title they wish, and barely any mention of being in the main event of WrestleMania. And it shouldn't be that way. Again, that just, it drives me nuts, because traditionally it has always been the main event of WrestleMania. That's always what they harp on. You know, the stuff where you get to choose the champion you want to go after, that's still a relatively new thing. And I like that. That's fine. But again, the WrestleMania winner should be in the main event of WrestleMania. And the main event of WrestleMania is not opening the show. It's not in the middle of the show. We're not fucking morons. We know what the main event is. EJ, who is your favorite Met of all time? Gary Carter. I used to have a Gary Carter figurine. I don't know. It's long gone by now. But it used to be Gary Carter and Daryl Strawberry. Those were my two favorite Mets. So I would say, probably still the case to this day, Daryl Strawberry and Gary Carter. Maybe Gary Carter a little bit more. Luis! Look who it is, everybody. It is Luis. Hold on a second. Let me go back here. Let me go back here so you guys can see. Luis's Super Chat. Luis Belmont Show. Debbie Ryan playing the role of a nanny on Jesse over Adam Pearce as the general manager of both Raw and SmackDown. You know, I will see you posting stuff sometimes about Debbie Ryan. You seem to have a very, like, a crush on Debbie Ryan. She's obviously very special to you, because I see you mentioning her name all the time, Luis. Ken terminated. What about when Undertaker, Cena, and a few others won their respective Rumbles? They didn't close out a WrestleMania. Yeah, and that was stupid. Undertaker and Batista should have headlined WrestleMania 23. Undertaker and Batista were pissed that they didn't get the final match, and they went out there with a chip on their shoulder because they wanted to steal the show, and they did. Cena and Michaels had a very good match, but Undertaker and Batista stole the show at WrestleMania 23. That should have been the main event. WrestleMania 24... that was 2008, Cena. Yeah, you're right. That one also didn't headline the show. Again, I've made it very clear how I feel. And if you don't want that match to go on last to WrestleMania, then pick a different winner for the Royal Rumble. Or headline with a women's match. If you have a women's match that's strong enough, you know, to headline a WrestleMania. I don't know that they'll have one this year, but we don't know yet what the Raw Women's title match is going to be. And I'm all in on Sasha Banks and Bianca Belair, but that's not going to headline WrestleMania this year. Keyshawn Gatewide. WrestleMania is a two-night event, so does Drew main event night one and Roman Edge main events night two? Good point. Good point. I didn't mention that. The fact that now that you have two nights, and they're not doing this every year. They've already announced one date for WrestleMania next year. Who knows what'll be happening with COVID and how many people even a year from now will be allowed in the buildings. I'm sure it'll be more than now, but maybe still not full capacity. But I think when you have the two nights, yeah, you've got two main events basically. So you can take one world title match and headline night one with it. And that could be, let's say Drew, if they did Drew and Cena, let's just say Drew and Cena, and then you could do Roman and Edge on a different night. When you have two nights, you have that luxury. So, absolutely. Khaled says he's got a crush on Jenny Slate. All right. Well, back in the day when Jenny McCarthy was co-hosting Singled Out with Chris Hardwick on MTV, she was one of my crushes. Jenny McCarthy. Jenny McCarthy and Jennifer Love Hewitt. One of my favorite movies, in fact, is a movie that many of you have probably never heard of before called Trojan War. And yes, Trojan is a reference to what you would think it's a reference to. It's a comedy. Jennifer Love Hewitt is in it. I just have always had a soft spot for that movie. But anyway, that was me. Back in the day, back in the mid-90s, that's who Solid Monster was crushing on. Juan Ocampo, what's going on, man? What's up? He says, what's up in the chat? What's up? Jenny McCarthy. Yeah, Jenny McCarthy had a show on MTV for a while as well. I don't think it lasted more than maybe one season. I think it was called The Jenny McCarthy Show, actually. Oz and Glorious is super chat is popping up here any second. 100 million on a Senate race. Oh, it's going too fast. 100 million on a Senate race. How much would Vince have lost if Linda took him to court in a divorce settlement for his extracurricular activities? I got news for you. Linda has known about his extracurricular activities for probably 30 years. And I think he said as much in that Playboy interview that he did back in 2000. I've talked about that on the podcast before too, although don't ask me which episode number because I don't remember. Yeah, Vince was doing a lot of shit in the 80s that he shouldn't have been doing. Jennifer Love Hewitt and Jackie Chan. Is that a movie that I'm not aware of? Ken makes a good point. Tiffany Amber Thiessen back in the Saved by the Bell days. Nigel wants to know, buy or sell, now that I mentioned Singled Out, Jenny McCarthy or Carmen Electra? Jenny McCarthy. Why didn't Linda divorce him? You'd have to ask Linda. I don't know. She loves him. She forgave him. Couldn't tell you. You have to ask her. Oh, Jennifer Love Hewitt did a movie with Jackie Chan. I did not know that. I had no idea. Jackie Chan's Tuxedo, is that what it's called? I'm going to have to make a note of that. I had no idea that she did a movie with Jackie Chan. I'm learning new things here on this stream. I am learning new things here on this stream. Screech, yeah, I saw that. I saw Dustin Diamond passed away the other day. 44, very young. 44 years old. This has been fun. I want to thank everybody for tuning in tonight here to your Beach Break review here on YouTube.com. Hope you guys enjoyed not only Beach Break, but enjoyed this review, enjoyed hanging out with me. I always enjoy your company every week, and I very much appreciate all of your support and your patronage. You should check out the full episodes of the podcast every Sunday. We got another big one coming up this weekend, episode 690. We got a lot to talk about, too, especially after what we saw tonight, right? I'm sure there's going to be news coming out about Kenta, what this all means. Is there going to be more Lars Sullivan no longer with WWE? I got thoughts on the Yokozuna documentary. We got another big trip down memory lane with This Week in History. So a lot of good stuff coming your way. I hope you guys are enjoying all the content. As long as you keep enjoying it, I'll keep pumping it out. So until then, be well, stay safe, have yourselves a fantastic rest of your week. Until next time, I'm out. Peace, guys.